My name is Arno Glitz. I'm from Brazil, third generation Brazilian. And I was a delegate of my church, the Evangelical Church of Lutheran Confession in Brazil, in the assembly, the World Council of Churches assembly in Vancouver. And I'm going to tell you a story, a history, not a story, a history. It is a part of the history of my wife's and my life. And sometimes it will seem incredible to you people, but it is a true story. Usually true stories are more incredible than fiction. And I would like to begin with a verse of Psalm 119, verse 43. And this is the one I read at the first meeting we had in churches in Cuba last year, when I, together with other brothers of the World Council of Churches, when we visited Cuba. And it says so, Psalm 119, verse 43, "And take not the word of truth utterly out of my mouth, for my hope is in thy ordinances, my Lord." I'm a businessman. Well, I'm a civil engineer by profession, 46, with master's, Illinois, 48. And when I came back to Brazil in 48, my family's business, which was started in the beginning of the 90s last century by my grandfather, they wanted a man, a member of the family, to live in a small town in the interior of the state of Rio Grande do Sul, the southernmost state of Brazil, which, by the way, was founded also by my grandfather. And so my wife and I, we went, one could say, directly from the civilization of the United States to the wilderness of the interior of Rio Grande do Sul. And I took over charge there of the house that my family business that my family had, the branch that was there still in Ijuí is the name of the city. So I entered business, grain business. Later on, we moved to Curitiba, the capital of the state of Paraná, because beans, which were our main product, were being more produced in the then newly discovered, newly developed state of Paraná. Now everybody is planting beans in Mato Grosso and further north. And so we moved to Curitiba. For this reason, together with another reason, our third child, a daughter, we have four children, three sons and one daughter, our third child, a daughter, is retarded. And so we had to move from a small town in the interior in 61, we moved to Curitiba and started there another part of the mission that God gave us. But now let's talk about the multinational. And, well, our business developed very much. In 48, 49, we were the first Brazilian exporters of soybeans. In the 50s, we were pioneers in exporting black beans, we were the only firm which up to this date exported Brazilian barley. We exported buckwheat. Well, we did a lot of pioneering thing, really. And many of these things I learned in the United States. I had been several times after 48 in the United States, especially 58, when I learned a lot of things about beans in Michigan with the Michigan Bean Company. In 1900, we had a company. We did exports of around $4 to $5 million a year and had some 300 employees, three main houses, Curitiba, Ijuí, Porto Alegre, and some other small depots. In 1974, in order to increase our business, by this time we had separated the part of Rio Grande do Sul from the part of Paraná. I stayed with the part of Paraná and part of Rio Grande do Sul. My folks switched it over to auto dealership. They sell Fiat cars. March 1974, I made a joint venture with a multinational. The name in Brazil is Neva, but Neva is only the daughter firm. The mother house is André, Lausanne, Switzerland. The Andres are more than 100 years old family business in grain, and they are one of the five big grain multinationals. I will use the name multinationals and transnationals, it's the same. Presently people use more transnational because it means that they have no nationality. They just want to get money out. This is it. So in the André family business is one of the five big ones in the grain trade. The grain trade is what one could call, what one says, the five big companies are the A, B, C, D of the grain trade. A for André, Lausanne, Switzerland. B for Bunge. I think some of you already heard of Bunge. They have, André in the United States is named Garnack Corporation. In Canada it is, I'm not sure, but it's something like our Northwestern Grain Company or something like that. Well, they have different names everywhere. B, Bunge Corporation, which initiated in Buenos Aires, Argentina, but now the seat is Switzerland, Geneva. No, Zurich. It's in Geneva, Zurich, I'm not sure. C, there are two C's in it. One is C for Cargill Corporation, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and their international arm is TradeX, Geneva. C is also for Continental Grain of these are our family firms, Continental Grain New York of the Fribourg family, and D is Dreyfus of Paris. These five companies are responsible for quite approximately 70% of the world trade in grains. I'm always amazed when last year I participated in the Third World Weeks of the Danish and the Swedish churches, and I was amazed that people speak a lot about General Foods and of coffee and a lot about Nestle in milk, and quite nobody knows about the ABCD, about these five family held companies which control our bread. The corn, soybean, soy meal, soy oil, they control this, these five family held companies. And as they are family held, they have no public accountability. Nothing published, no balance sheet published, and nobody knows really their size. But one knows that each one of them does over some billion dollars of business a year, and they also own ship companies and so to transport their own. Well, I made then a partnership with NEVA, which is a daughter of André. So when I say NEVA and André, it's just the same. Although NEVA officially is not owned by André, it's owned by three companies, one seated in Uruguay, one in Panama, and one in Switzerland. And these companies for their own are owned by others. It's a corporation maze. But you have to go, you know, through it until you find the top. I knew the top from the beginning because I had personal relationships with Henry André, who is presently one of the three presidents or vice presidents of the whole company. And I should add that the Andres are very religious people. They are the main supporters of the Église des Frères Livres, the Church of the Free Brethren, a Darbist church, a Plymouth Brethren church in Lausanne, which was founded in Lausanne in 1840 by Darby, who was a Plymouth brother, who came from England to Lausanne in Switzerland in 1840, and the Andres are Darbists. Well, I had then this joint venture. We bought beans and soybeans and corn, and we sold it inside Brazil and exported and all that. The financial thing was all for Andres, and we entered with our know-how of the Brazilian market and on the international market, because in beans, edible beans is a very specialized item. It is not something like corn or soybeans or wheat that you have standards, worldwide standards, and that's it. It's edible beans is just a very, you know, very specialized field. And we are a very old edible beans company in Brazil, especially black beans. And we did a lot of business, all kinds of business, because they really gave financial, they financed all the operations. And all as this was all controlled by them, I only knew that we had good results, but I never had really an accountant. And they always managed to keep us very short of money. Very short of money. So that we were always grasping for money just to pay the employees, you know. And this forced me to do something that I would have never done in my life unless a very desperate situation. I sold beans of the joint venture stock to pay my employees. So in other words, I cheated the company of which I was half the owner. Well, in beginning of 1975, Brazil exported a lot of black beans to Mexico. Mexico had a shortage. We exported a lot of black beans. I know that the profits were very large. But I never knew, up to this point, 75 till now, I don't yet know the exact selling price. They never accounted that for me. And well, one of these days, one of their managers telephones me and says, you know, Arno, you work for nothing all the time because the interest that we are charging is so high that all the profit would... I said, but it's not possible. Which is the actual selling price? He said, well, it's so and so much, and then we have these expenses and that in dollars. And it came down to a certain value in dollars, and from this value in dollar, I made a whole account, and there was a huge profit in it, you know. Although, even with the interest, although they said there was nothing. And this is a very interesting thing, that I made a paper, my handwritten paper, out of that. In 1 hour, I made all the calculations because I knew all the business we did. And I made this out, and I sent it to them. And this was later presented by them. One of them had handwritten remarks on it, but it's presented by them to the judge. And so he certified the date, 4th March 75. Well, in other words, I am the owner of about the half of $500,000 in Switzerland. And the whole profit that they did not account me for was, our part was over $700,000, of which $250,000 in Switzerland, and the rest they should pay me in Brazil, and this was interest now comes around to $1 million. And we continued doing business, and in November 75, there came a whole bunch of them to my office with lawyer and all that and said, you cheated on us. I said, yes, I cheated. Then you make a confession. I said in the typewriter and I wrote it down. Said, I did this wrong, but I'm paying this, your part of these beans, I'm paying this in this way. I give you the house and the beach, I give you this, I give you that. But I require from you that you give me a full account of this thing. You can imagine my situation. And even so, on that day, I felt very free because during all that time, I felt so very bad that I had cheated. And I always wanted to tell them, but they never, you know, they always kept me very short. In order to pay all the rest of our debts, my wife and I, we sold everything we have. I used to be a wealthy man. And I tell you, during these many years of very hard experience, we both became very rich people, rich persons. This is a wonderful difference you can make in the English language between being wealthy and between being rich. I don't know of any other language you have these two words to signify so different things and many times mixed up. Well, and then I started. When all this was over, I came home and my wife said, but in all that profit in this business and that business and that business, I said, yes, you are right, but I required for them. But they are never going to make you anything. They never ever give you any dollar, anything, any money, any cruzeiro. And so I made a letter to them, end of 75, and sent a letter saying, you are owing so and so much. And I propose to be paid by so and so much. Okay. Then their manager in Brazil came back from vacations and telephoned and said, can you be here on February 10 or 12, 76? I said, yes, I go there. To São Paulo, went to him and said, I want my part. Then he said, yes, but Arno, this is over $500,000. And well, you know, our accounts are different. And well, I said, well, I prove everything documentarily. You have to do it. Well, I'm going to Switzerland. You know, we have our annual meetings of the whole André Corporation. And I go there, and when I come back, I telephone you about the results. But you have the whole right to sue us and all that. I said, no, I'm not a man to sue. I like peaceful settlements. This is the way I was brought up. Well, he went to Switzerland, and he arrived on a Sunday. He arrived on a Sunday there, and on Monday they had the meeting on the Tuesday, February 24, 1976. The André Company wrote a letter to our embassy in Bern. I'm telling you the thing, how it happened, not as I discovered it. They wrote a letter to the Brazilian embassy in Bern saying that I was behaving as a man who is not, not according to the good tradition of Brazilian exporters, which was a lie, and is a lie, and that Neva is not their daughter firm, is not an affiliate of theirs. And this was signed by one man of the Andre family. And up to this moment, I cannot understand how a person who does $1 billion of business a year, who owns a personal fortune of some tens of millions of dollars, can sign a letter lying because he doesn't want to pay $500,000 or $1 million what he's owing. It still doesn't get into here, but in any case, every people is different, and they call themselves very good Christians. Well, so in April, nothing came. I sued. I started a proceeding, a judicial proceeding against them. And then when they were called by the judge, they had 5 days to answer. And then they mixed everything up and put that paper, which I told you about, they put into the proceeding. And this paper had a date on it. This was very important, because I could be accused of also defrauding dollars. But as this was the last shipment we made, I had not defrauded dollars. I was used to defraud dollars from Brazil. But on the handwritten comments that one of the Neves people made, by his handwriting, he came to different results and divided them by two. And Neves, Andrea's defense against our affirmations was that, first of all, with Arno Glitz you cannot match, because after all, he's stolen, he is this and that, and we are suing him criminally. Then I knew that I was being sued. Second, there was never a partnership. And as a proof that we paid him everything, we are joining this paper where it is divided by two. You know, that this was God acting. Human persons would always look at it, but they had only 5 days, and so they got mixed up, their lawyer got mixed up, they had 5 days, and there was a Sunday in the middle, and you know, and he didn't realize that by putting this paper in, he was giving really the proof to me. And on May 4 was one of the saddest days in my whole life. At 9 in the morning, my lawyer telephoned and said, Arno, they replied, and you know, you're being criminally sued for a crime. 50 minutes later, my brother telephoned me from Porto Alegre saying, Arno, our mother died. Mm-hmm. Only God could have put us through this. Well, I came back, and then the first thing I did, I went to the criminal judge and said, I know that I'm being sued for criminal things, but here are the proofs of whatever I did, and all the documents. And this didn't even come to process. It was filed away for lack of documents from the part of the accuser. So I was free of the accusation of a crime. And I needed two documents from my own government, which I thought, and here comes the Bible again in. This is a very interesting thing. Usually people think that you have to be very clever. And I acted really as a very, very dumb person. I think that many times God thought, what a dumb guy, he's not seeing the way I'm putting him in, and he's always just looking around and not finding the way I want him to go. But I found a lot of consolation in Romans 16. Where is it? Oh, Romans 16. Well, it's in the last Roman. Where it own 16:19. For while your obedience is known to all, so that I rejoice over you, Paul saying, I would have you wise as to what is good, and guileless, completely innocent, as to what is evil. Usually we are always on guard against evil things. But here it is, you have to be guileless, completely innocent when you are in front of evil. And I was so. I thought my government agencies would respond according to the truth. I had already sent them documents and all that and this. I had entered a petition to the Brazilian Antitrust Division of the Ministry of Justice. We have antitrust as you have here, only that ours doesn't work well. But I had entered a petition, you know. And in order to reinforce that petition that I was being the victim of abuse of money, of economic power, I asked the Foreign Trade Department of the Brazilian government to give me a statement about the dollars that we moved in the beans export, and that and then I could prove that $500,000 had actually gone to Switzerland, and of these 250 belonged to me, 250,000. And I asked the Central Bank of Brazil to also state about these transactions, because they are officially, at least, controlled by the Brazilian government. They never answered me. But the antitrust division, very slowly, July 77, they decided to process never for abuse of economic power. And asked the same foreign trade agency and the same central bank to give proofs of what I said. And both the foreign trade agency of the Brazilian government. It's a shame for me, and it's not a shame for me. I'm a Christian, I'm a Brazilian, I love my country. I have no fault that we have corrupt people in our government, because we didn't elect them. The foreign trade agency of Brazil, the Central Bank of Brazil, the president of the Central Bank of Brazil, equivalent to Mr. Falker here in the United States, for you to understand what a man this is. They signed the letters to the antitrust division in which they lied against documentary proofs. The central bank president lied against documents that the central bank had furnished me before. And so I asked them very humbly, I thought, no, these people, they just signed somebody here in the below, got some money, where, you know, and then came the letter to sign, you sign it, you don't know what to sign. Then I asked them for correction. They never corrected it. And then I asked their superiors for correction. I asked their superiors and superiors and superiors up to the president of Brazil. And during all these times, I discovered that in Brazil, there was established a system to exploit the country and to defraud the country of dollars. This is, you might think that Arno is crazy now. But I'm going to give you this. Since October 74, this is all I discovered during these years. And many times I discovered it because a friend came and said, Arno, you have to read that and that article and that news magazine. I bought the news magazine, said that article, and all of a sudden, you know, it's the Holy Spirit. I cannot explain it otherwise. Sometimes I stumbled on the things and it took me one whole month, all of a sudden, to realize the importance of what was written in official documents. It's this, if you, two ways of investing country money in Brazil if you are a foreign company. One, you invest risk capital. For Brazil, it interests that you invest risk capital, that you grow with us together, that you cooperate with us, that you go with us. That you get rich, you get powerful, but with us. And the other is just only to lend money. So you will have always your interest. And the people will always have to pay back the loan. Interest and loan, and here not the only thing that you have to pay back is the dividends. Dividends and interest are payments on capital, it's just the same. But let's just for you to see. Let's say that at the end of the year, dividends and interest. At the end of the year, this is a change in the law in October 74. You sent $1 million. Let you have good year and you can send $1 million dividends to your mother house. Or you send $1 million interest. So it's just the same $1 million that you send, I mean that gets out of your directly of your pocket. Now the tax system in Brazil is such that the interest will cost you only $1 million. Yeah. 32.3.25%. So this, the tax on interest will, so the whole that you will pay is $1,032,500. But if you send dividends, here you have 250, and then you have still the income tax on the corporation, 350. So it costs you $1,600,000. Now I ask you, if you are a capitalist, an American capitalist, and you want to invest money in Brazil, you would never put it as risk capital. Risk capital, you take risk, you can lose it all, and it costs you much more to send dividends outside of the continent instead of loaning. And loans to Brazil are frequently guaranteed by the central bank, by state development banks, by the Bank of Brazil, by a lot of reliable Brazilian institutions. So you will get your money back, and it costs you much less. So this was then exactly against the interest of my country. It should be the opposite, that you would have more incentive to risk capital, that Brazil has no need to pay back, instead of that you could lend money to Brazil, but it should cost you more than you have risk capital. This is completely against the Brazilian interest. Now, but what interests our country? I want to tell you that all this I said in an interview to TV on April 19, 1980, in a very short 10-minute interview with all the names of the people in it. And this was later on read, this interview of mine was read by a state deputy of the state of Paraná, and it is in the annals of the state parliament of the state of Paraná, April 28, 1980. And on September 10, 1980, it was read in Congress by a federal representative, friend of mine. He read my interview with all this, and it is in the annals of Congress in Brazil. So it's public. And when I discovered this, I said, but this is completely against the thing, so there is a structure. Because here, when you get into this situation, and you are a company, you had invested money in Brazil at risk, you will try to get this money out of the country, the invested, the risk capital, get it out of the country, you will have losses here, only red. Your balance will be only red, 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 and most transnational companies in Brazil, they operate year after year in the red, and they're each time larger and bigger and more powerful. Then you send your risk capital to your mother house, and it comes back as a loan, so that Brazil will pay interest on money, on dollars that actually belong to Brazil. This usually is done by Swiss firms and through Switzerland, and that's true. You know how this operates. For instance, you sell dollars. You sell soybeans at, let's say, $220 a ton. $240 a ton, which is, I think, is now presently the price. But you invoice it only at $220. Which does that mean? That with each ton of soybean that go to the foreign country, $20 go with it. If you export 200,000 tons, $4 million went there. Now, if you are drained of $4 million here, you will have a lack of working capital, so it has to come back as a loan, guaranteed usually by Brazilian banks, Brazilian institutions. And so it announced this to the President of the Republic. And on December 7, 1979, the President of the Republic came to television, and we made a devaluation of 30% in the crusade against the dollar, and he asked all Brazilians to tighten the belt. He used it. You have to tighten the belt. And on the same day, instead of putting this up to 25%, which is as it is here, he lowered it to 1.25%. So I knew that the president of Brazil, General Figueiredo, was the final man to go to. December 19, 1979. I remember this day, and I will remember it always in my life. I woke up at 4 a.m. and I went to make my hot water for my tea. And when I got into the room in which I always sit to read my Bible in the morning, I sensed a big force behind me, pushing me not to the Bible, but to the other side of the room, to get a paper. And on that paper, I wrote the text of the Bible that I cited that same day in the letter I wrote to him, to the president of Brazil. And I told him, you are the supreme guarantor of a scheme, of a setup to defraud dollars from Brazil. The two most important action goals are the central bank and the foreign trade agency. And they can count on the protection of the military within the National Information Service, famous SNE. Everybody is frightened by the SNE in Brazil. They did terrible things against the population, they put people in prison for nothing and all that. And I said, the corrupted setup for corruption for to protect corrupted multinationals is seated in SNE. The new president are the guarantor of this. And this I said in the interview also. Gave all the names of all these persons. Well, and my fight goes on. Then, well, we were down and down and down and down. And when we sold our last thing that we had and we moved into a rented apartment, and then our life began. This was June 1981, 2 years ago. Our life began to flower again, and so came small business to us. My business company is now my wife and me. And we have no employees, but we work very hard, and the thing is going. And I retired, and in the meantime, I retired on, we have in Brazil the system to retire on years of service and contributions. And my church always supported me as they could, as a church can. Speaking out against corruption and giving me moral support. October 81, the first days of October 81, I was sitting in my office, and then telephone rings. It's Silvio of Porto Alegre, of our church in Porto Alegre, says, Arno, are you sitting? Yes, I'm sitting. Why? And you know, a Lutheran of German descent always thinks, what did I wrong? Isn't that so? What did I wrong? He said, you were elected a delegate of our church to the Assembly of the World Council of Churches. World Council of Churches. Oh yes, I read in Time about the World Council of Churches when the Orthodox churches joined the other one. And then I telephoned, you know, I know that American men don't weep, but we Brazilians, we weep very, very, very much. I was just with tears rolling down. I called my wife and told her, Ruth, this and this happened. And God is sending us there to tell the people all over the world what corruption means in a country. Now this has been going on in Brazil now, you can see, for 9 years. Brazil is owing presently, then you come to numbers, which you yourself, you're frightened by these numbers. In August 1980, I made a thing in English, which is being kept up to date. The last entry was now in June 83. I made the thing a story in English, and I sent it to the International Monetary Fund, to the United States Embassy, to the German Embassy, to the embassies of the countries to which Brazil owes a lot of money in Brasilia. And I sent it to the biggest American banks, which are the largest private creditors of Brazil. National City Bank, Chase Manhattan, Morgan Guarantee Trust. And I told, and the International Monetary Fund, I told, please, as a Brazilian, I beg you, do not lend 1 cent more to Brazil. Why? Because when you lend $1 billion, we, the Brazilian people, have to pay it back. But we don't know what of this $1 billion comes into Brazil, what is being robbed in the middle of it. Second, and what of what comes into Brazil is used for real productive purposes and not for pharaonic works, which cost a lot of money and much more than it should cost, because many people are getting their kickbacks. So if I were a Brazilian authority, I would say to the International Monetary Fund, no money that you people lent to Brazil after August 1980, I would pay back 1 cent of it, because you had been advised by a Brazilian, and not a fool Brazilian, a person who knows what he says, and who proves, this is the worst, there is no greatest force in the world than truth. And documented truth is something that you can't go against. And my case was built up, I always say, as a pyramid of brickstones, one brickstone after the other, one fact, one document above the other, so that this is unmovable. Now let's get, after you know all this corruption, Dow Chemical Company, which you know from their doings in Michigan, at least I read in Time about it, is one of the defrauders. The most respected Brazilian newspaper one day put on its economic page, the big letterhead, Dow Chemical defrauds Brazil with dollars. Nothing happens. Sharing company, the chemical, Philips of Holland. The Philips people, they do some wonderful thing. They have the Philips big factory in São Paulo. And then they have in the northeast of our country, they have a factory which makes only This is a factory built up with Brazilian fiscal incentives of the Brazilian people. And then they make integrated circuits. And this Philips of Northeast, with another name, they send all their production, they sell to Holland. Let us say it's a price of one. And when Philips of São Paulo needs the same thing, they have to buy it from Holland at 12. And Brazilian authorities know that. And they don't know what happened. We know what happens. Stealing the country. That's what happens. Banque de Paris, they have a bank in Brazil called Bank of the City of São Paulo. They defrauded Brazil also for $5 million, or more than that in transactions. And then they were sued by Brazilian judicial system. You know what happened? The government changed all the attorneys of the federal losses of the federal court system, so that this case was filed away, nothing was found. But let's go now to Brazilian foreign debt, $90 billion. The most respected Brazilian newspaper, O Estado de São Paulo, an equivalent to New York Times, and they have always a lot of articles from the New York Times. They said in edition of June 22, the last, that Brazilian citizens, not multinationals, have in Swiss accounts or in, let's say, in foreign accounts, dollars, Swiss accounts, American accounts, Dutch accounts, they have $20 billion, at least. I myself think, based on other data, that it is at least 30 to 35 billion. But let's take the 20 that they, the conservative, the people who are in favor of the government, that they agree. This, in order to be in foreign accounts, had been stolen from Brazil, isn't it? I spoke to you how you do it under invoicing, how you defraud dollars, how you get dollars out of the country by exporting. Under invoicing. In importing, Dow Chemical did that. Dow Chemical of Brazil imported from Dow Chemical of Bahamas, I think. I don't know which one. They imported a certain chemical, 20,000 tons. This chemical costs on the world market $250 a ton. And Brazilian Dow Chemical paid $250. This means that with each ton that came in, $250 came out. 20,000 tons, $5 million. Well, but this year, Brazilian citizens, they have this. Either kickbacks or stole it. In any case, this is money that the Brazilian people will have to pay back, isn't it? Then you have 70 left. In April 1980, the most respected government senator in the Senate, he was then leader of the government party and later became president of the Senate, Jarbas Passarinho. He stood up in Senate and said that one third of Brazil's foreign debt, according to the data he had from Central Bank, that one third was actually money that transnationals established in Brazil owed to their mother houses. One third is 30. Now comes the question, of which I don't know the answer. I don't think that anyone knows it. How much of this is actual loans, and how much of these are of these dollars which were taken out of Brazil and came back as loans? How much of this is money that Brazil really owes, and how much of this is Brazilian money that these companies took out and loaned it back to Brazil, to their subsidiaries in Brazil, and we Brazilians are paying interest for that? I don't know. But let's assume that half of it has been stolen. Let's be conservative. We are being very conservative with this number, and I think with this also. So actually, what could be called as the actual Brazilian debt is $55 billion, which is a lot of money. Now, Brazil is paying a year from 10, depending on the interest rate, to $13 billion of interest. In other words, if you have 4 or 5 years of Brazilian interest, you had this actual loan already paid. Now comes the question, what is it that Brazil should pay? I don't know. What I know is that Brazil came to a point where even that rich country, and Brazil is a rich country, as the United States is, that even that rich country cannot go on supporting so much corruption, so much exploitation. It has come to the point you cannot go along. Well, I still had, let's say, some points that I could say my fight is going on, and I'm using always these documents to say, and I'm not afraid to say it. I had many threats. My wife had been threatened by a colonel of the Army's Secret Service in our town. He telephoned her and said she should tell me not to write any more letters. I wrote these, you know, since 75, beginning of 76, I wrote, I think, some 7,000 or 8,000 letters to Brazilian authorities. Always new documents, so on, so on, so on. Please, I would like to have your help. Please help me. Without your powerful hand, I can do nothing. You know, I am a weak Brazilian. And please, they never answer. Some of them answer. Very few of them answer. And I had a threat of that famous senator. He wrote me a letter saying, I'm going to sue you. And because you are accusing Brazilian authorities and wonderful generals. And I answered to him, if you really were going to sue me, I would have been receiving now an injunction from the judge and not your nasty letter. But please go ahead and sue me. And well, this colonel, he telephoned my wife and said that I should stop with everything and that they would try to do things against our sons. And my wife answered the following thing to the colonel. And to answer to a colonel of the Secret Service of the Army in Brazil means something. It is not the same as here when you go to the guy and go to hell if you want to. In Brazil, this is not yet the point. But we will come to that point with the military. And she said, Colonel, I want to tell you, I'm a woman who have suffered very much. We have had years under tremendous tensions. You don't threaten me. If you have something, telephone my husband. But with me, no use to threaten me. Wasn't that wonderful? She said to me afterwards, I don't know how I did it. She was not threatening you. The guy telephoned me and said, your wife just, she treated me badly. She mistreated me. I said, I don't believe it. She is not of this type. Yes, yes, she did. Then you gave cause to her. Oh, he just exploded. You have to stop writing. Colonel, not you. No, any person in Brazil will make me stop writing to my authorities asking for justice. Because I know that either the chief of the army or the chief of SME or the president of the republic or one of the big ministers we have in Brazil, if he comes to the point and says, André, pay this guy from Curitiba. We don't want to hear about him any longer. And the other day, I'm paid. I know that. In the meantime, the process stopped. It's my purpose that it stopped because the antitrust division of the Brazilian Ministry of Justice, in the meantime, you know, slowly going ahead, they condemned Neva for abuse of power. And they entered with a petition of court injunction against that decision, claiming that the CADE, which is the antitrust division, had no legal authority, and this is not true. CADE was created in 63 as a result of an article of the Constitution of 46 which required its creation. So now I have to wait that this whole thing goes through court, if it is injunct or not injunct, and then they go to the merit of discussing this and that. This will take some years more. In the meantime, our business is going up. We became very rich people. You cannot believe that the person who isn't standing now in front of you during 79 and 80, many, many times, quite every night, I begged to God, please take me out of this life. I cannot stand it any longer. Because as I was discovering all these things, I always was thinking, I'm so small, I'm nothing, I'm just one person. You're going against the big multinational, going against the powerful Brazilian government, the powerful machinery, but then God knows how he does it. You know, in the meantime, the whole pressure of the Brazilian people has increased so that the government, they cannot just go ahead and say, well, let's liquidate Arno. Because this has been distributed too much. Not only in Brazil, also outside of Brazil. And I sent to the World Council of Churches all my documents to have them filed there as a trustful depositor of my documents. So that if someday something happens to me, the world will know. Well, the world is knowing already. Because in Vancouver, I spoke a lot about it, and I gave interviews to radios in Switzerland, two radios in Switzerland in German, and one to in Germany, in Portuguese to Brazil, and one in Canadian to Brazil, and the BBC of London in Portuguese. And so I spoke against the corruption of our generals and of our president. Yeah. I'm not afraid of him. So, okay, I think now, I'm sorry.
What do you envision? Or do you envision any way in which the world community can bring the transnationals to accountability? There are some transnationals that say they want to govern themselves, as international groups, and there are others that are skeptical that that could ever happen. Do you see any positive suggestions that we might support?
Yes. United Nations Code of Ethics. The United Nations has a center on transnationals, and the United Nations have worked out over the years some articles of a code of ethical conduct. Point. In Brazil, this code of ethical conduct came out of a parliamentary investigation on transnationals and so forth. They worked out a code of ethical conduct, which passed the Chamber of Deputies. And now it went to the Senate in 1978. It went to the Senate. And now there it's put in a drawer because the government leaders say, we have to wait for the United Nations ethical standards to come out so that we adapt ours to the United Nations. And in the United Nations, you cannot do anything because the powerful companies will not allow it to do. But this is it, that the United Nations come out actually with an international code of ethical conduct for transnational companies. And more, ask the nations in the developing nations that they make code of ethical conduct in their own countries. And then something that you have very little to do with, to ask Switzerland to close, to make public the secret accounts. And then you will say, well, then these people will put all the corrupted money, they will, here it is. Conservative. They will put it in Bahamas or in Panama or Liechtenstein or Monaco. But then comes the credibility. Switzerland has credibility. Now, if the Swiss would agree no longer to have secret accounts for corrupted money, I think you could cut this kind of corruption at least to the half. And with an ethical conduct of code of ethical conduct, you could at least have a legal and something legal in your hands to go against them. Because we also have to expect that governments in the developing countries, there comes a time when the Brazilian people will no longer allow the corruption. Newspapers, the most respected newspapers in Brazil write this. Their so-called revolutionary government has institutionalized corruption in Brazil. We always used to have corruption, but now we have it as an institution within government. This is a lack of ethical conduct, you see. And so these things are slow in changing. But I think that this would be a very helpful step, really. And then, for instance, for us Brazilians to change that silly thing of incentives, to put incentives on risk capital instead of loans. But this we will have to do because we cannot pay the $90 billion. So we have just to turn, to turn the...
turn off the faucet.
Turn off, you have to turn it off because Brazil cannot support it any longer. And at the end of this year, this debt must be over 100 billion.
Well, I think you probably haven't made it clear enough that the ultimate loser in all this game is the United States. Because, as you say, that Brazilians, which have a better economy than some of the other countries that are being helped by the International Monetary Fund, they're saying, well, we can't pay the interest on that, but all you have to do for us is give us more money.
Yeah, and then more money will be stolen.
And so we are in the process in the Congress of giving another $8.5 billion or some such thing to the International Monetary Fund, and all we're going to do is have Brazil and all these other countries owing the respective banks of the world with that much more money, And, you know, who's losing? They're not losing. Brazil's not losing.
No, no, we would have to.
You know who's losing? We're going to lose when.
No, no, we are ready to pay this year back, even if it takes us a century.
Yeah, when Brazil and half of the so-called third countries of the world are going to tell the International Monetary Fund and the banks, forget it, we don't owe you anything. We can't pay our debts.
Now, I ask you a question. Let's say that Brazil said, we cannot pay it, period.
Okay.
We will not pay it, period, because this happened. The American banks would go bankrupt.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless the government, this means the American people would support the banks. So the people would have to support the rich people.
Yeah, that's the way I look.
That's the same in Brazil.
Yeah, it pays to be broke in this kind of situation.
But
all we do is put out more money to keep them going until the day they say, "Oh, we're done. We're
I myself feel myself very well because in August 80 I wrote them, please do not loan and lend any more money to Brazil because it's happening this and this and that. And even recently I wrote to the International Monetary Fund saying, you do not help this Brazilian government because this Brazilian government is against the legitimate interest of the Brazilian people. And I signed it and I have an address and direction and they answer just shortly. International Monetary Fund writes me a letter. Arnoglit, Papa, Brazil. We acknowledge receiving your letter dated so-and-so, respectfully.
Oh.
In any case, I have a proof that I received. Just before finishing, are there some other more questions? I would quote the Bible.
I believe that this debt situation got to the point, I may be mistaken, that the large U.S. banks wouldn't loan any more money, and then the U.S. government stepped in and made some kind of guarantees.
Yes.
So if there is a default on these debts, the debt part of it, at least, will be transferred into the federal debt of the United States.
You will pay for it.
Yeah.
In other words, you will pay for it. As we, the Brazilian people, will pay for this. In the news magazine of Veja, which is the best in Brazil, of last week, my wife brought it to Vancouver, was an article saying that Brazil stopped building what we call the steel railway, which had been condemned as a bad project since the beginning. And the World Bank did not finance 1 cent of it because they said this is a bad project. You could, instead of spending $2 or $3 or $4 billion, you can spend with $200 billion, you double this line, which already exists and has proven good, and this will do the job. No, they did it. And after spending $2.2 billion in tunnels, in bridges, in the terracing and all that, they stopped now the whole thing. And wilderness will grow on it. But we will have to pay for it. This is, I tell you, this is the real shit. All this I told you, I can prove. If there's another question or...
That sounds like whoops.
It's incredible, this story, isn't it? That I was discovered all this slowly, very slowly, from one authority to the other, to one step upward, more, one step upward, 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 and always maintaining that all the people informed, mostly the upper people informed. And well, you have to seek consolation for that all. And I also found it here, as always in the Bible. Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. And something very personal. This is 14:12, also Roman. So each of us shall give account of himself to God someday. And I think that when this day comes, I will say to the Lord, I will be able to say, you know, I fought for my own interest, but I did not conform myself, and my conscience is clear that I, at least, small as I am, I did whatever I could. Thank you.